we don't decide our subconscious programming ahead of time, but when we come to the awareness and the realization that the things that are going on around us are reflections of what's going on inside of me, the only person that can change that is myself. And so I see that as a continual revision process of the story of life. And so how I use stories is, I love the fact that superhero stories, because I'm a nerd, Rocky movie stories, film movie stories, give us these beautiful illustrations and perspectives of ways of looking at our own journeys from a different lens. And learning about ourselves and seeing ourselves in a different capacity.
Hello, and welcome to episode 159 of the Quiet and Strong podcast, especially for introverts. I'm your host, David Hall, and the creator of quietandstrong.com. This is a weekly podcast dedicated to understanding the strengths and needs of introverts. Introversion is not something to fix, but to be embraced. Normally, we'll air each episode on a Monday. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite platform. Tell a friend about the podcast. Leave a review. That would mean a lot to me. Here's a recent one. Great podcast for all introverts. Great topics, great episodes, and what it really means to be living as an introvert. Reviews like this help more people find the podcast and help spread the word about the strengths and needs of introverts, help other introverts embrace their introversion, and promote an overall understanding for everybody of the beauty of introversion. Leave me one today. When you recognize that you're living in a story of your own creation and you're the writer of it, it changes the game. You start seeing everything differently. You see that your mind and your heart are like a garden, and what you plant and cultivate inside yourself is what you're going to produce with your life. It's this method of living that D. Grant Smith not only lives by, but teaches his students through his books, programs, and trainings. He calls himself the growth farmer for personal development through the lens of spirituality and storytelling. After spending over 20 years in broadcast media as a syndicated radio host, he became known as the relationship guy in the indie music world by teaching musicians and creatives how to build stronger connections with fans, media, and influencers. Then in 2017, he faced an agonizing heartbreak with the end of a 12-year marriage. That led to writing of his acclaimed book, Be Solid, How to Go Through Hell and Come Out Whole. D. Grant combines powerful storytelling, philosophy, wisdom garnered from great sages and teachers, and practical advice to help people heal from brokenness, learn how to love themselves, and grow loving relationships that transform lives from the inside out. All right. Well, welcome to the Quiet and Strong podcast, D. Grant. It's so great to have you on today.
Oh, man, I'm so excited to be here with you, David.
All right. Well, we're going to get into the great work that you do. And before we do that, let's just talk a little bit about your journey. You know, tell us about yourself and how you became a coach.
Well, I became a coach accidentally. You've probably heard that before. I got into the coaching realm in right around 2014, 2015, I think. I had written a book that I was doing it for two reasons. At the time, I worked in radio. And I was running a radio station, and also I hosted a syndicated radio show. And so I received a lot of pitches and CDs at the time, but that was the way that we listened to music, in the mail, from both music promoters and independent artists and people that were just doing things on their own. And the people that we receive so much music that it's impossible to listen to everything that comes in. But as a relationship-driven person, when somebody would send us a message that was like, hey, I heard you from these people, or they sent me a message directly. Hey, D. Grant, I heard your show and I love your show. How can I get my music on your show? I'm like, whoa, you actually address me by name? You have listened and you want to be on the show? You're not just like throwing your stuff at me like I'm everybody else in the world? I'm absolutely going to listen to this. Well, I was doing the same thing with my show, getting it picked up on other stations. I would message stations independently and indirectly, address the station manager by name, tell them I'd listened to their show or their station, because I had, and I knew what worked. So I wanted more artists to take a more relationship-driven approach. Well, after the book came out, a friend of mine who has done some really big things with some fairly big people said, you know, you really need to be teaching this stuff to people, dude, because people don't know how, artists in particular, don't know how to build relationships. They don't know how to contact people. They don't know how to address people by name. You need to coach people in this. And I was like, coaching, what does that even mean? And I immediately thought of like a football coach or somebody on like a basketball court with a whistle. Like I'm supposed to, you know, go whistle. You're supposed to put my first name on the package you sent out. Why didn't you do that? That's not the way it works. So I learned what coaching was. I hired a coach myself, and that's how I got into the business. But I've coached in different capacities. I don't work with in the music industry anymore. Life has changed quite dramatically over the last 10 years or so. Now my work is more in personal development and helping people change the story that they are living and the story they're telling themselves. But that's a whole nother conversation and subject matter altogether.
People ask to be on this show and they've never listened to it. They don't know what it's about. And it makes that personal touch really does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk a lot about our personality types and our strengths on this show. And you are an empath and a highly sensitive person. Tell us more about that. What does that mean to you?
Well, I know that can be a very gray area for a lot of people. If you're highly sensitive and you're empathic, you know exactly what it means. And it has a particular significance and meaning to you. For me, it's an awareness that in any given situation, especially when I'm engaging with other people, I'm going to be feeling some feelings and having some thoughts that might be mine, but they might not be. I might be perceiving something that is coming from somebody else, or I might be perceiving something and then filtering it through my own filters that is changing the way that I'm seeing a situation or myself or other people. And so it's a lot of it is about a heightened awareness as much as it is a heightened sensitivity to different feelings and intuitive impulses that come through kind of the invisible spectrum around us.
Did you always understand these gifts, or did you have to learn to understand them and learn to embrace them?
Yeah, I'm still learning. I think that's a big part of this whole process. One of the things that has been a life lesson that continues to come back into my world over and over and over again, I think as a reminder, is that there is no arrival point. I was reminded of that this morning. When we think of myth, when we think of the progress of our story, oftentimes we can think of Joseph Campbell and his work with the hero's journey, but it's called the hero's journey, not the hero's destination or the hero's arrival. We in our individual journeys are constantly in this evolutionary process of changing and changing and growing and changing and losing some things and gaining some new things and learning some things about ourselves and accepting new aspects of ourselves and embracing ourselves in new ways. And it's an evolutionary process, not okay, you've arrived. Now there's nothing more for you to do except sit around and wait until you die.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't always know that life was that you're continuously learning, but you know, as I'm getting older, I'm still learning. And I know that that's the case, and that's, we learn by experience, really.
Mm-hmm.
There's no substitute for that.
Yeah. I've got like maybe you do the same thing, David, where certain characters from movies stand out to you and they become like lifelong teachers for you. For me, one of my biggest lifelong teachers is Rocky Balboa. And he says several powerful things, but I think one of them, going back to Rocky, the movie Rocky Balboa, I think he says, life is undefeated. It's always going to be, it's always going to be winning. It's always going to be teaching you something new every step along the way.
Yeah. So tell us more about Rocky. How did that inspire you?
Well, my all-time favorite movie. It's not going to be what anybody's expecting, unless you know.
Okay.
Rocky III.
All right.
I've lived that story numerous times. And I'm a philosophical person, man. So I see things from a philosophical perspective. It's a big part of what I do. Actually, you were asking about coaching earlier. I really don't even consider myself to be as much of a coach. I think that's a nice label that we attach to things so that we can understand them, maybe fit it into a box. But what I really do with people is more of being a guide and a support and a teacher. I really see more of my role and my purpose as being a teacher. But in the ways that Rocky III, the movie, has taught me, philosophically, it's a film about what happens when we get to certain places in our lives where we feel like we're unstoppable and everything's working out for us. And then suddenly everything changes and goes in a completely different direction. Who is it that we're going to be? And are we going to listen to the trauma that we've experienced and let that be the storyteller of our lives? Or are we going to do the really difficult but necessary work of listening to our hearts and choosing to rise above that? And maybe take on some different practices, but definitely take on some different beliefs and not hold ourselves under the gun of who we were before and evolve. And if we choose to do that, then we can rise to levels that we never thought we could reach before and overcome things that at one point scared the living crap out of us. And that's in my estimation, that's the entirety of the story of Rocky III, all in one little nugget.
Yeah. And I mean, things happen to everybody, right? And it seems like many, like you said, that's where it ends for them. But I mean, I hear so many stories of people that have found what they're looking for in life, but they had to hit like a rock bottom moment first. You know, they had to, mm-hmm. something happened where they had to, just like you're saying, they had to decide to learn from it and move on, right?
So there's a really pivotal scene. There's actually two very pivotal scenes. I shouldn't say that two. There's several very pivotal scenes. There's a couple that stand out to me from that particular movie. So Rocky has lost to Clubber Lang, played by Mr. T, debut of him in all of film. At the same time, he lost his trainer, Mickey, who died of a heart attack. And as he's grappling with the fact that he's experienced this incredibly intense amount of trauma all at one time, Apollo Creed comes back into his life and talks him into taking on a rematch with the guy that just beat the crap out of him in two short rounds. And Rocky agrees. But as he's trying to train with Apollo and learn a completely different way in a completely different place and feels entirely out of place, all he can see, Stallone did a great job. Stallone as a screenwriter is a brilliant man. He's a brilliant director and a brilliant actor. I don't really care what anybody says about that. He's one of five people to ever win best director, best screenwriter, and best actor. That's a very small group of people. Anyhow, in the film, he portrays what it's like to go through trauma incredibly well, because as Rocky's trying to train, what's playing in his mind over and over again is him getting pummeled to pieces by this person that he's trying to train to fight. And he's burying Mickey and not actually giving himself the time and space to grieve. And Apollo is trying to get in his head to change his thinking. But when we experience trauma, it's not just our mindset that's been affected. It's our equilibrium. It's our nervous system. It's our heart space. It's our emotional well-being. It's everything. And so one of the pivotal scenes that happens, they're on the beach. Rocky's running against Apollo, but he keeps replaying in his mind these flashback scenes of just getting beaten endlessly. And Apollo says, you know, what's wrong with you? It's over. We're done. But Adrian, who metaphorically in the film, in the whole series, represents his heart. Adrian comes and confronts him in a way that only Adrian can. And when his heart confronts him about what's really going on, for the first time in all of the films, he says, I'm afraid. I'm afraid. And his heart, Adrian says, there's nothing wrong with being afraid. What you have to decide is if you're going to let fear tell your story, or are you going to choose to do this for yourself, not for me, Not for Apollo, not for anybody else, not for the world, not for the money. Are you going to do this for you? And as soon as he makes that decision, the whole movie changes and the whole game changes and he becomes a different person. And so the second pivotal moment that goes back to what you were just saying, David, to me, Clubber Lang represents fear. And if we look at it metaphorically from this film, and especially from a philosophical perspective, the face-off before the start of their second fight, Clubber looks Rocky dead in the eyes and he has this stone cold look on his face and he says, I'm going to bust you up. But Rocky has a different look in his eyes than he did from the first fight. He's got a stone cold look in his eyes and he just looks him square in the face and says, go for it. Now, when you've faced fear, when you've experienced fear in your life and fear has run you into the ground and buried you and hurt you over and over and over again, and then you come to this pivotal place in your own journey where you decide, I'm not going to let fear tell me my story anymore. I'm not going to let fear push me around. I'm going to choose something different. Then the next time fear shows up and tells you, I'm going to bust you up, you do exactly what Rocky did. And you're like, bring it on. I got you. I don't give a crap what you say. You're a different person. And for me, I've been through a bunch of experiences where my worst fears have knocked me around all over the place. But I've needed to have those experiences to decide who it is that I'm actually going to be in life.
Yeah, that's very powerful. I'm going to have to rewatch that movie again.
Excellent.
So we are built on stories, you know, and that was a very powerful one you shared. How do you use stories to help other people with their own stories?
I feel that part of my mission in life is to help people connect with their own hearts and souls using the power of story. So talking about fear, one of my worst fears is rejection and abandonment. And I went through that in 2017 when I experienced divorce that I didn't see coming. But actually what I learned from that, I had a very powerful spiritual experience where I met God. And I heard the still small voice speak to me when I was at just the 20 stories below rock bottom is what it felt like. Just gently say, you don't know what love really is. And you don't know what love, you don't know how to love yourself. And this is the true cause of all of your pain. I started looking back through my life and I'm like, okay, what's actually been happening is these people that I loved so dearly were showing me how I felt about myself. This wasn't a personal thing. It was a reflection. And I get to decide, do I want to continue to look at the mirror and see the same thing every day? Or do I want to change the reflection? The only way I can change the reflection is if I change myself. And so the more I started digging into what is considered self-concept, one of my favorite teachers is a man named Neville Goddard. Neville lived from early 1920s, I think, to 1972. But he talked a lot about self-concept or concept of self. And it's a belief of, it's our core beliefs about who we are as people individually, who other people are, who or what God is, and who and what life in the world is, how it works. And we get to decide. It's our subconscious programming. So we don't decide our subconscious programming ahead of time, but when we come to the awareness and the realization that the things that are going on around us are reflections of what's going on inside of me, the only person that can change that is myself. And so I see that as a continual revision process of the story of life. And so how I use stories is I love the fact that superhero stories, because I'm a nerd, Rocky movie stories, film movie stories, give us these beautiful illustrations and perspectives of ways of looking at our own journeys from a different lens. And learning about ourselves and seeing ourselves in a different capacity. So one of my favorite heroes is Superman. And I see myself in Superman in so many different ways. And it's an empowering way of changing my perspective that helps me be able to continue to move forward through things or feel inspired in ways that I didn't feel inspired before. And so I use storytelling as a way of helping people to see themselves more clearly and more fully and understand their journey in a more holistic and empowering sort of way. So that it's not like the whole coaching thing. A lot of coaching is telling people what they need to do. And there's some people that want to know, okay, What's step one? What's step two? I was looking for that when I was looking for things when I first hired my coach. And I had a conversation with him one day where I'm like, when are you going to tell me what the steps are? And he's like, I'm never going to tell you what the steps are. That's not the way that this works. If I tell you that there's a prerequisite established in stone, step one, step two, step three, for you to get to where you are, I'm lying to you. I don't know that. Nobody does. Your job is to believe in yourself. And he said something to me. Steve, his name is Steve Palfreyman. Steve said, it's one thing that I will forever treasure. He said, the more you back yourself, the faster you will get there. There's no steps involved in that. There's just a decision. Now, I basically take these words of wisdom that have been communicated to me, and I write stories about that and help people be able to see themselves more clearly and feel empowered in their process.
Tell us a little bit more about the stories that you write.
Well, I feel like I'm a channel, a channel and a vessel for these things that are coming from this other divine source that's not me, or not me in my human consciousness. But I've written a couple of stories in particular that as they pertain to the things we're talking about here. The story I have that was my first, I sat down to write a murder mystery, and then a different story emerged from it. It still has those elements in it, but it's telling more of a metaphysical story. It's about this guy that lives in a very small Nebraska town, and he at one point was a baseball superstar. But in college, he blew his shoulder out and lost his scholarship and had to come back to his very small town in Nebraska. And when he came back, the town that he left was no longer there because everything had changed. His parents got divorced. Some of his closest relationships started to fall off. And then things just, it was like one traumatic experience after another. And he has this adopted little sister named Hope, who is mute or something close to it. She speaks in a very different language, but she communicates to him in a way that helps him, kind of like the film scene we talked about earlier with Rocky and Adrian, connect with his heart in a different way. Now, while all this stuff is going on, there's actually a murder investigation that's taking place because in this small town of 250 people, six people have been found dead or missing. And so these two detectives from Lincoln, Nebraska show up and they're looking for who's the culprit behind this. But as the story progresses, there's two things that are taking place. One, there's this kind of transformation that's happening inside the town that's being kind of led by Hope in her own unique ways. But there's also this interesting reflection between the lead detective and the protagonist and how they're kind of the same person, but they show up in different ways. And so they reflect each other in some interesting dynamics. But the story, I think if I share any more about that, I would end up giving the ending away, and I don't want to do that. But
okay.
But I also include an epilogue at the end of most of my stories, because when you get to the end of it, there's probably a ton of questions that you have. And I try to use the epilogue as a way to answer some of those questions, but also encourage people to do a deep dive in themselves to explore aspects and concepts of this story or that story as it relates to aspects of their own personal growth and personal development and things for them to explore on their own journey.
Yeah. So how do they do that? How do we gain self-awareness, whether it be our personality types or, you know, whatever it is, how do we do that?
I think that it's a matter of actively and consciously making the decision of paying closer attention to yourself and being a student of life and being a student of yourself. I'm somebody that doesn't really believe that the idea of a quote unquote expert that knows everything. I don't believe that those people exist. I think that those are great little slogans and taglines that people can use to try to sell things. But when you get down to the brass tacks, nobody knows everything about anything. And the people that have been known for being the sages, the real, like, you know, ascended masters or whatever, all of those people were students. They never stopped learning. And so if we can take a page out of their playbook and adopt this practice of constantly being a student of life and a student of ourselves and paying attention to what it is that life is showing us about ourselves and asking ourselves questions, I think that's one of the best and most easiest ways of practicing more awareness is asking yourself questions. And the basic questions that we learn in school, who, what, when, where, why, and how, apply that to ourselves. Why am I doing this? What's really going on? Is there something here that's taking place that I can't see? And as you're asking yourself that, you're also asking God that, and you're opening up the door for these revelations to come to you.
And so, you know, we definitely talk a lot about strengths, and on this show, they're different for everybody. We all have our own gifts. We all have our own strengths. What are strengths that you've found in this journey that you have that are yours?
I see those as superpowers. So I appreciate the question.
I like superpowers.
Off the top, I am somebody that is incredibly empowering. I know this about myself. I'm very, very passionate. You can feel it in my presence. You can hear it in my voice, in the ways that I talk about things. My number one love language is words of affirmation and encouragement. So I don't think about it, I just do it. But when somebody says something to me, especially we hang out on LinkedIn, you make a post, when I comment on that, you're going to get a lot of empowerment and encouragement. And I'm not trying to kiss your ass, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up it. I'm not trying to do something to like make you feel good. I'm just being me. And that authenticity, in that empowerment, in that affirmation feels transformational. That's one of my superpowers. Another one of my superpowers is I'm very articulate in what it is that I communicate. I attribute a lot of that articulation to spending so much time talking on the radio as long as I did. And also, I, aside from doing the teaching and the coaching, the other things that I do, and doing all the writing, I think writing is a great way to improve our communication skills, because you're articulating your thoughts. But I work with kids in teaching reading. Want to get down to the brass tacks of how to be a better teacher and a better communicator? Go find a place where you can work with small children, because you have to take complicated things and make it simple and plain. Making complicated things simple and plain is one of my superpowers. People talk about that all the time. And then the third thing is probably, I have an ability to recognize the superpowers of other people if I can spend about 30 minutes hanging out with them. And since I'm such a metaphoric person, and I've watched and read so many comics and superhero movies, it doesn't take me very long to go, oh, this reminds me about this other character. Have you ever seen yourself like this? And that kind of, that goes back to the empowerment thing. You changing the way that you see yourself in your own story. Now you're thinking of yourself from the perspective of the superhero. Oh, you don't feel the same way anymore. You're not a little human being anymore. Now you're a superhero. Holy crap, I never saw things that way before. And that change in perspective, that's a powerful thing.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned that we all have gifts, and I think that is definitely displayed in our superhero movies. Everybody has their different powers, right? Their different mm-hmm. abilities that are all needed.
What would you say your superpowers are, David?
I am a deep thinker, so I'm very analytical. So I notice things. I try to find ways to make things better for me, and whether it's at work or, you know, in my personal life, the others around me. I think that that's probably the big one.
Okay.
And when we're talking about these things, you and I had a conversation before today, and, you know, whether we're saying empath or highly sensitive person, introvert, extrovert, sometimes language gets in our way when we're trying to help each other, help ourselves find our strengths. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing. And I appreciate how you brought that up before. I appreciate you bringing it up now. Because one of the things you talked about was the idea of labeling things. And it's interesting because there's some people that really appreciate the idea of labels from an understanding standpoint. And there's other people that are like, no, don't put a label on me. I want freedom from that. Don't try to, you know, put me in this box. And I think that, you know, there's a part of that that's part of the like individual personality sort of thing. But there's another part of it that's kind of like just where we are in our journey. There's certain times in my life where I've really felt like having a label that I can put on myself in certain relationships or certain things helped me feel more closure and more secure and more safe. And there's other times where those same labels felt restrictive and confining, and I wanted freedom from it. And so I think that there's an ebb and flow in this process, but and I think it's also one of those things where, like, this thing that can be a strength and something that benefits us can also have another side to it if we're not aware of it.
So a lot of the work I do is, you know, around introversion, but with that, that means there's a lot of variety in that. It's not mm-hmm. like, you know, all introverts are not the same, which is how some people try to paint it sometimes. And it's a more a matter of, okay, well, what does that mean to you? Not just saying, okay, well, I'm an introvert or extrovert. Some people use the word ambivert. I'm in the middle somewhere. But what mm-hmm. does that really mean? You know, what does that mean as far as you asked me about my strength? You know, I think I'm very analytical. All introverts aren't going to be the same amount of analytical, but that one comes because I'm an introvert, because I am a deep thinker, but other people are going to use their deep thinking in different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it also means, you know, I'm going to need to spend some time alone. I don't mm-hmm. want to spend all my time alone. I love connecting with people. Often it's in more deep conversations, kind of like the one we're having right now. Mm-hmm. But you know, what does it mean? And not just, that's where I think the label gets in the way sometimes.
So I'm like you, man. I am a deep thinker too. I think that, I mean, you can't be a philosophical person and not be a deep thinker. Like those two things kind of come together. They go together. one of my favorite things in the whole world is having deep conversations with people. Like, I think there was one year for my birthday, so several years ago, my former partner asked me, what is it that you want for your birthday? I was like, I just want like a couple buddies over. Let's just eat some food and have deep conversations. That's all I wanted. And that's what I got. And it was beautiful. But that's not necessarily a matter of being introverted or extroverted, but I understand how not wanting to be out in front of people and wanting to kind of be back and be in like a quiet space with just one or two people, like, allows the space for that deep introspection to take place. There's a lady I spoke with last night that, she's a leader in a bunch of different capacities and a coach in a bunch of different capacities, but she was telling me about how, and when she's in front of people, she's very extroverted. When she does anything online, she gets very introverted. And I was like, oh, you're an ambivert. I'm like that. I understand. And she's like, ambivert. I've never heard of this thing before. And I was like, yeah, well, that's what they call it. That's what I consider it. Some people embrace that. Some people don't. I think that in different scenarios, we can have different aspects of our personality come out. When I'm in front of people in a live setting, I'm much more seeming to be extroverted. And people will say, well, you're just a very extroverted person, but I don't consider myself that way. But I recognize that when I get around certain types of people in an in-person setting, that part of me will come out. But when I kind of do the same thing when it's like on a social media sort of thing, or just like you said, David, I need to have part of my highly sensitive, empathic nature, I need to get plugged into myself away from the world. I need to have my recharge time. And because otherwise I'm going to either burn myself out or just be totally miserable. And I think that that's, from what I'm learning from you, that's part of this introverted sort of dynamic and something that just comes with the territory.
Yeah. And again, it's part of how language gets in our way, because what I'll say is I love being social. I love being with people. Never makes me an extrovert. I'm always an introvert because I'm calling my introversion my deep thinking, you know, and that I turn inward more often than not. And so when I'm turning outward, I'm still an introvert, but it's just understanding where my strengths lie and what I need. And often people say, oh, introverts, they get drained. They get their energy from being alone and they get drained by people. And I do not like that definition. I think there's some truth in there. Yeah, we can get drained, but I say that I can get drained by some people, some situations, and I need to recharge, but also I can get highly charged up by some conversations like this one. At the same time, I need to be alone for other things. I need to be alone to do some of my best thinking. I'm also a philosophical person too. I need to do my best work. You know, I need some quiet to do some work, but I don't want to be alone all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is an ongoing struggle, like just to help people come to their self-awareness and not let language get in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are really good points. I do my best work I do a lot of my best work when I'm by myself. Sometimes with the right other people, working with other people can be. So I think this is kind of like that whole thing about, you know, the awareness factor. There's nuances in all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you just have to figure that out. Like maybe I say sometimes some of the best ideas come from brainstorming with other people. And sometimes some of the best ideas come just by me being alone and mm-hmm. alone with my thoughts. I know that both work. If you're going to try to make me brainstorm all the time with other people, I'm going to be missing out on some of the great stuff I would come up with on my own. But at the same time, I'm not going to say that I'm going to have all the great ideas. I need other people, but there's a balance there for me.
Mm-hmm. Likewise.
All right. I want to hear more about Superman.
Okay. What do you want to know?
So why is he your favorite?
I think part of it is subconscious, to be honest. There's a picture of me as a baby. I'm in I'm probably 2 years old. I'm sitting in one of those child seats, but next to me is my first action figure, a superpowers Superman figure from 1984. I used to watch religiously Superman 1 and 2 with Christopher Reeve. I also watched the Rocky movies religiously as a child too. Probably the reason why I'm such a big fan of that whole thing. But aside from that, it's when I was a kid, I think every kid wants to have super strength. Every kid wants to have super speed. Every kid wants to be able to fly. I wanted those things, sure. But the one thing that I wanted more than anything in the world was I wanted to be invincible to what somebody else could do to me. And I looked at it even when I wasn't aware of what I was actually doing. It was a metaphoric thing for me. I wanted to be bulletproof from the scorn and shame and judgment of other people, because I felt like I was rejected and scorned and shamed a lot from being a very small framed runt kid that got picked on a whole lot. And there was a part of me that wished that I was Superman, because I wouldn't be hurt. And also, if push came to shove, I would win. Now, I never had those experiences of, you know, having to get into tussles that were, you know, detrimental or something like that. But I also understood this feeling of having heightened senses that were misunderstood by everybody else, and having something inside of you that you know is really powerful, but not knowing how to express it and what that might mean. And so there's a great representation of this in the film Man of Steel. And from 2013, the Zack Snyder version of the Superman origin story, when Superman's reflecting on when he first discovered his powers, and he's in the classroom, and he's a little kid, he's in first or second grade, and the teacher's asking him questions, but suddenly he's able to hear everything that's going on in the room all at the same time. And he's able to see everything. He's looking through the bodies of everybody in the room, and he sees the muscle structure and the bone structure and the heartbeat of his teacher, and it's overwhelming him, and he can't take it. And he runs out of the classroom and hides in the janitor's closet. And the teacher's banging on the door and telling him to come out, and he's crying, and he's like, it's so much all at once. Well, as a kid that experiences all kinds of different things all at once, all kinds of confusing things all at once, whether we're talking about being highly sensitive and empathic or not, we're just talking about all of the different crazy stuff that we experience growing up that we don't understand, and that people are trying to demand of us to, you know, be normal. What does that even mean? Other people are calling us freaks and nerds and, you know, rejecting us and picking on us for being different. So am I going to reject myself because I'm different from everybody else? Maybe I should just hide in the closet and hope that the world will just go away and leave me alone. Or can I decide that whoever it is that I'm really am underneath all of this, all of my weirdness, all of my differences, all of my uniqueness, maybe there's something in here that's actually really powerful. And maybe if I embrace that and I step into myself, I can be somebody that leaves a powerful impact on the world. And to me, that's what the Superman story is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I relate so much to what you're saying. And so many guests on the show, especially as we're talking about introversion, say, I felt like something was wrong with me, right? Mm. And it's because of that, like, you know, when you're a deep thinker like you and I, that may not be understood by someone that has other gifts and they're not thinking as much about things. So they haven't thought about deeply about the same thing that you might be thinking of. And so you might be labeled as weird, but I've learned that those are amazing gifts and the world mm-hmm. needs it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's part of the work I'm doing is helping people embrace their strengths, you know, like Superman, and really, you know, embrace who they are, even though that might be different from somebody else. And I mean, honestly, when you're being yourself, that's when you're going to be your best. And I tried to be somebody else for far too long. And when I learned to embrace myself and live as my authentic self, it's been amazing. And that's where, you know, we're trying to help people go. It's like we all have our different gifts, like the different superheroes, and we need those gifts from each other.
Yeah. Well said, sir.
And again, that's a big part of what I do. I know that helping people with confidence is important to you too. So how do you help people have confidence when it's lacking?
Well, I think it comes back to, for me, understanding what people's love languages are is a very important way of being able to know that I'm actually speaking in a way that they understand. So I firmly believe from my own experience that even if your love language is primary love language is physical touch, acts of service, gifts, or quality time. If those are your primary love language, you're still going to respond to words of affirmation. I think that that's the universal language of humanity. That when it's coming from an authentic place, again, not trying to be somebody to say something to try to get, like, not used in a manipulative way to try to get something from somebody, but when it's coming from an authentic heart, that one way to build confidence is to just remind somebody that they're loved exactly as they are. You don't have to prove anything. It doesn't matter what you've done. And to be an active listener with somebody and to give them the space to be heard and be seen changes the way people see themselves. It shows that they do have value and they do have worth. And that, even if that's just the beginning step, that's part of the thing that becomes an influential game changer that changes the tide forever.
So, D. Grant, we've talked about a lot of great things today. Is there anything else that you want to mention before we go?
Well, I do want to make note, David, that the work that you're doing is incredibly valuable. This idea of quiet and strong, I think, is especially in terms of introversion, because just like you said earlier, we can be labeled by other people that our quietness or our deep thinkingness and the aspects of us that make us unique, yes, different, but unique, that's somehow a weakness, is a misnomer. It's a way of disempowering ourselves. So by you being somebody that is consciously aware and has been through your own series of refining fires and using those life lessons to empower other people that have had and are on similar journeys as you, man, more power to you for the work that you do, dude. That's awesome.
Thank you so much. And, you know, it's crazy because I definitely have run from the word quiet. I didn't like it. And You know, I don't think I'm quiet anymore, right? But I'm always going to be a deep thinker. And something that I've learned is introverts think and then speak, and extroverts often speak in order to think, right? And so I'm never going to say as many words as an extrovert. I'm just not wired that way, but it's a good thing. And so even though I feel like I'm sharing, socializing, doing all that I want to do, people might still call me quiet because I am going to think first and then speak. I am going to think. And I just learned that that's a good thing.
Well, it's interesting. Even as you're saying this, of course, I'm thinking in terms of like superhero dynamics, but who are some of the characters that are not known for long, drawn-out speeches? Batman, Wolverine, and Captain Marvel. Now, all three of them, incredibly respected and revered and powerful in their own unique ways, and insanely influential. So it's interesting that we can typically think that to be some sort of person that has incredible power or influence or capability, that means that you have to fit in this one box and be this outspoken, loud, grandiose, charismatic, whatever person. Not true. Also, he's been dead for 50 something years, I think, but we're still revering the life of Bruce Lee for everything that he brought to the world. But aside from the martial artist, that dude was a deep thinker, a powerful philosopher. And so these different dynamics and aspects of ourselves, embracing all of that, that's all very important stuff, man.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, this has been such a great conversation. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. If people want to find out more about you and what you're doing, what's the best way to do that?
Well, I invite a conversation anytime. LinkedIn is the only social media place that I'm really hanging out at. So linkedin.com/in/D Grant Smith. Make sure you got the D in there at the beginning. Otherwise, who knows who you're going to find. but if you want to read my stories, I encourage you to do that. I've got life lessons and all kinds of stuff at growthfarming.com. That's the best place to connect with me.
Sounds great. Thanks again, D. Grant.
Hey, David, thank you so much. This is wonderful. I enjoyed this thoroughly.
Thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to further connecting with you. Reach out at david@quietandstrong.com or check out the quietandstrong.com website, which includes blog posts, links to social media, and other items. Send me topics or guests you would like to see on the show. If you're interested in getting to know yourself better, there's now a free Type Finder personality assessment on the Quiet and Strong website. This free assessment will give you a brief report, including the four-letter Myers-Briggs code. I'll add a link to the show notes. There's so many great things about being an introvert, so we need those to be understood. Get to know your introverted strengths and needs and be strong.